SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, Wednesday of Derby Week, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. Midweek, and stakes continue to ratchet forward after yesterday when we wrapped up by bringing you the field of 20 for Saturday's Kentucky Derby. A terrific card came together in the racing office, and the weekend is complete. The weekend is ready for your handicapping pleasure and your planning. I'll say this right off the break, and it's come up already a couple of times on the show. It came up yesterday during the post-draw session that I was delighted to be a part of with Ed DeRosa and Gary Young and Donna Brothers. The comments that have reiterated, did it actually Monday night as well at the Second Stride fundraiser, and it seems to really be resonating. That is the planning, and that is the time spent before race day or even race day morning, planning out your wagers, understanding how much your bankroll is going to be, and understanding your opinions and where they can be leveraged to greatest effect. We talked about it a little bit with Maury yesterday. Everybody loves hearing from the Wolf, Maury Wolf. I heard from two Wolves. It was a Wolf pack yesterday, Jack Wolf too. But I'll tell you one comment that raised some eyebrows, and I got some feedback. People were shocked that a player like Maury bypasses the superfecta and was warding people off the superfecta. And you don't necessarily have to take that advice if you've successfully negotiated the superfecta. And certainly when it comes to our final thoughts from Johnny D and from James Scully, they're both Derby superfecta players. You heard last week how James targets it to the tune of too large. I mean, you know, $2,000 bankroll against it, and he has had five figure scores twice. 50 and $75,000 scores, and those are they're not life changing, but they're life enhancing. But I thought it was very interesting that Maury was not as interested in the superfecta pool, and that he's going to suggest taking advantage. And I stressed yesterday in that session being able to use the 50-cent increment for triples and for pick threes. And if you're a small player, that is your friend, and that should be your wheelhouse. So we're going to keep that conversation going, actually. And Pete Fornatale is going to join us after the first break. Andy Serling. And Andy and I were talking last night, and a terrific question bubbled to the surface, which is, as you, and we'll let him riff on it, as you go through the field, and as you're identifying win candidates, you know, first and foremost, horses that you're trying to decide if they can win or not, because that's where you start. The question to ask is, what trip do I envision where this horse can win this race? What has to happen? And when you start getting into conditions where a lot of extraneous and oddball things have to happen. Extremes. And not that that isn't impossible. Not that there aren't extremes of pace and so forth in both directions. But the less of those tangent areas that enhance your horse, the horse you're evaluating's chances, the more of those there are, the less likely the horse is. And the less of them, the more likely the horse is. So I thought the way Andy phrased it, he just, we were talking, I forget which horse per se we were talking about, but he said, what trip does this horse, what is he going to get? How is this horse going to win? And that's a very valuable, and frankly, it's not just valuable for this race, it's valuable for any race, especially when you're evaluating horses with prices attached. So I thought we'd let Andy riff on that, and that a fun equation. And as Andy has said in years past, this is not a race that he says he's handicapped this. Actually, he got into it more. He said the more he looked and the more replays he watched, the more interested he got and the more engaged he got. But it's not a race that he is historically, in the 10, 11 years we've had these discussions, he typically is a little bit of a kind of a shoulder shrug, because I think Andy's funny. Andy doesn't care for random results and just, you know, chaos that is out there for chaos's sake. And not that this race is designed to do that, but it can have that aspect. Look at what was a couple of years ago, Nyquist, when we got here, 2 weeks, not just for the 2 weeks, but leading in through all the prep season. And it looked like a completely confusing picture. And the top four favorites run first, second, third, fourth. So even in the inverse, chaos, that's a different kind of chaos, the unexpected. But looking forward to Andy's take. Sid Fernando will be here top of hour two, and we will do Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Hill and Dale, obviously, with Curlin's presence in this race, and more. I mean, frankly, dotting the cards. We'll talk about the Saturday undercard after this. But the Pedigree Focus, Curlin, the name has come up so much this week, you know, particularly in light of the Unraced to Two discussion. And I'm sure at one point or other I've said, if Curlin, you know, if a horse as good as Curlin fell short, that's how difficult it is. But meanwhile, after his Triple Crown experience, winning the Preakness and losing a Belmont in an epic rendition, Rags to Riches, went on to just a spectacular career, and his stallion career is producing on an annual basis classic horses. So watching and discussing Curlin vis-a-vis Magnum Moon and Justify as part of the Sire Watch Pedigree Focus discussion with Sid. And Sid will probably have three. Typically, he's got three horses that he kind of boils down to from the pedigree standpoint. And there's no Fipke horses in this running. So he doesn't have nobody can say Sid's decision is influenced in that regard. But it certainly, when it was, or when it was a contributing factor, it went okay for everybody. The Dallas Stewart years, the salad days. Paul Matisse will join us at 10:30, and we'll get Paul's take, and not just on Derby and Oaks, but any other portions of the card. Expecting Mike Welch at the top of hour three. Did not actually see Mike this morning. Spent a little time with Gary Young during the training session. I'll also talk about that in a minute. And Gary's playing golf today. Very good for him. Gary's heading out. Play some golf. Seth Merrow, Jeremy Plonk in hour three as well. We'll get Seth's final thoughts and Jeremy's as well. And, of course, yesterday after the draw, Express Bet, Kentucky Derby Wagering Guide, starting to send in the updates and added information that has come to light. And actually, there hasn't been a lot of that yet, but certainly the draw, as we turn our attention to yesterday, everybody agreeing how remarkable it was that you would take 20 names and numbers, and that for the most part, virtually everybody's happy. And even Jason Zervis, even Jason had something good to say, saying better than 19 or 20 for Firenze Fire. So he was not, he said, we'll work with it. He's okay. And free drop Billy, Dale Romans might not have picked the two hole, but free drop Billy's coming from out of it, and all he's got to do is break clean and establish some position. We've talked about the speed aspect, and Baffert had the line. Not unusual that Baffert had the line of the post draw. he was particularly happy that the speed drew inside of him. That part of it was the one thing he was sweating out, and he said the most important horses got good draws. My excuses are really dwindling. So now I've got to come with the horse. I thought that was pretty good. You can't be blaming it on if the horses don't, Solomini and particularly Justify, obviously, if it doesn't go well. You can't blame it on the seven hole. No, he got a good draw. But it is amazing how, and we noted it immediately at the time, Combatant, he's going to cut over as soon as the opportunity arises, and he's coming from out of it anyway. Pretty much a very satisfying layout of the way the horses are going to spill out. You heard the comment from Mick Ruiz, I think. Ed DeRosa asked the absolute right question immediately about Bolt Oro and the 11 and being the first to go in and having to wait until everybody else got loaded, and Ruiz was not unnerved by that at all. There was really no there was no input from the Coolmore team, so in terms of that open slot between the 14 and the 15. And speaking of Paul Matisse, Paul and his brother Duke, they've had a cause celeb for several years. Duke has been calling for a 20 horse gate and to do away with the auxiliary gate, and that Churchill, it time for them to get a 20 horse gate. So that point gets made every year draw day. It's the instead of Pewitt, they would put Matisse, I think, on the gate when that ever happens. So from that standpoint, everybody very satisfied. Then we got, as the morning went into the afternoon, the card came together. And really, much as we discussed yesterday morning, this card, 14 race card, starting 10:30. It's the traditional layout, early maiden races, a couple of maiden races, and the allowances. The first stake, 113, race six, and the Humana Distaff, the terrific 7 furlong, grade 1 standard for fillies and mares. And the group, not a huge field, 8 of them, but very, very competitive. And was hoping somebody would kind of grab me by the collar, and they really didn't. Between Finley's Lucky Charm in there and Sky Diamonds and Lewis Bay and American Gal, they're spread out across the gate of 8. And the Yamana Distaff, the Distaff Turf Mile, this has been a terrific and typically a very good bellwether for the fillies and mares going on the grass. And the nice group in here that has got some prices, and that includes Madam Stripes for Neil Drysdale, 12-1. How about Proctor's Ledge, 12-1? Shug on Leave, 8-1. La Cornell drew the outside. Very notable how many horses drew outside. We'll get to the discussion of Rushing Fall in a minute, but La Cornell draws the 11 for Jose Lascano and Mark Cassie, and going the mile is gonna have to, you know, find a way to save some ground. Dream a While for Chad Brown, 7-2 as your favorite, but I thought the Distaff Turf Mile was super competitive. The Churchill Downs, Imperial Hint, 9-5 for Louis Carvajal. The difference here is that this is 7 furlongs, and Imperial Hint, little extra ground. Mark Cassie cross-entering Awesome Slew in both the Ali Sheba and in the Churchill Downs. Warriors Club, who at 15-1 is very competitive here. This is a fun group. Limousine Liberal, who's trains at Keeneland but runs well here in this group as well. The American Turf, Field of 14. And River Boyne, a group of horses at 5-1, including Untamed Domain, Rushing Fall. But Rushing Fall, Chad Brown entering to see what might happen with her having drawn outside in the Edgewood. Well, that kind of made the decision for him in terms of Rushing Fall, where she's going to run for Friday. So would you rather be from the 11 hole versus the girls or the 12 hole versus the boys? Kind of had his hand forced. The other, who's the favorite in there? 3 4 pence, the Aidan O'Brien Invader. And O'Brien, interesting, happens to be involved in the All Stakes Pick 4 that starts in race 9. He's got a horse in the American Turf. He's got a horse in the Pat Day Mile. He comes back. He's got DeVille in the Classic, in the Turf Classic, and, of course, Mendelsohn. Aidan O'Brien with 4 runners in that Pick 4. The Pat Day Mile, 14 of them. And this race, a lot of times it'll be horses cutting back out of longer attempts, working toward the Classic season. Horses like Mississippi, 10-1. The 2-for-2, Madison's Luna, 5-1. Mask returns in this spot. We've hinted his return. Restoring Hope makes the trip with Baffert String, and Gravitos drew the outside, drew the 14. It's got a long run, of course, from the chute. In the Pat Day Mile, you go to the Turf Classic. I mentioned DeVille. Beach Patrol back for his seasonal debut and doing well per Chad Brown. Chad's also got Curielove in here. Arklow, last year's American Turf winner. Sent Jay Pribman to the windows to cash. That was a big Jay push at a nice price. Synchrony, good old Synchrony. Yoshida in here, saw Yoshida work the other day. Camelot Kitten, Channel Maker. Bill Mott, well represented here with these two. And then your Kentucky Derby. I, tongue-in-cheek, put up the the pick four. I just mentioning Aiden O'Brien involved in all the races. Are you ready to construct your tickets going into a sequence of 14 by 14 by 10 by 20? 14 by 14 by 10 by 20. 39,000 combinations plus. 39,200. Unbelievable. 14 by 14 by 10 by 20. And, of course, there's the... there's the last chance roundup pick four, the Turf Classic, the Derby, and then the Allowance 13th and the Maiden 14th. Three pick fives. The action is head spinning. I mentioned, you know, just in passing there, that O'Brien with a group of one horse each in the in that sequence. I actually caught my eye, and of course, finding this stuff. There it is. What trainer is involved in more races Friday and Saturday than any other? Mark Cassie is involved in 19 races. 19. Brad Cox is in 11. Asmussen and Pletcher, 10. Romans and Wilkes, 9. Bill Mott, 7. A little esoterica. Speaking of those kinds of things, it's now May 2nd. Yesterday we talked about all the Derby winners from May 1st, including two Triple Crown campaigns begun. The most famous May 2nd, 65 years ago today. Not that Dark Star isn't a deserving notable winner in Derby history, but let's be honest, more notable that native dancer was beaten. That's, you know, I put that up on. We're going to listen, actually, to something with that. Let's take a break. We're live at Churchill, just getting going. Pete Fornatale joins us first.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Is this the end of the Apollo curse? Undefeated Justify or Magnum Moon could become the first since 1882 to win the Derby without racing as a two-year-old. Of course, 18 others will enter the Louisville starting gate. What are their odds of extending the spell? Begin your search for enlightenment with ExpressBet's Kentucky Derby Wager Guide. It's available free online at ExpressBet.com beginning Friday, April 27th. Horse Player Now's Bob Neumeier. XBTV.com's Jeff Siegel and Millie Ball. Daily Racing Form's Dick Girardi. Santa Anita's John White. And At the Races radio host Steve Bick analyze the race according to main contenders, value plays, and $100 wagering strategies. Plus, get intriguing stats, trends, and daily updates you won't find anywhere else. NBC's Eddie Olchek joins experts in a revised guide version May 3rd. Go to ExpressBet.com and get the guide to open a new account and to choose your bonus of up to $500 in time to wager on the Derby.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Races back to Churchill Downs. Derby Wednesday tomorrow. They've managed to turn what was otherwise a sort of mundane Thursday of Derby week. They've managed to turn it into a thing with Thurby. It's been a big hit. Pete Fornital. Pete is very good at turning whatever into things. It's the thing, Pete. You're the master at that.
I have friends from Louisville who live in Brooklyn now, and the way they explained it to me is, you know, I guess back in the day, a lot of the locals would, you know, Oaks Day was huge for
yes,
a lot of
that was Louisville's day at the racing.
But I guess from what my friends described anyway, and it's only one data point, but you know, as Oaks got crazier and crazier, it sort of opened the door for Thurby to become a thing. And now mm-hmm. she says all her friends from, you know, they go there. And, you know, you watch the Oaks from home, it's too crazy, nobody goes there anymore, it's too crowded, that kind of thing. And then, and who knows, maybe eventually we're going to build this all the way back to where Tuesday, 2B or whatever is the local day.
2B. we'll have to work on Wednesday monikers. I love it. Well, let's get a quick, before we talk the weekend and some of your thoughts, a quick survey of contest scene and, of course, right here and online at Twin Spires. They'll have the Kentucky Derby betting challenge. Another, I think this is what, year three, maybe?
Third year of this one, I think. And so. I know there's a lot of players who will be either descending on Louisville or playing online. Going to be a lot of money and a lot of seats at stake for the Kentucky Derby contest. Need to reach out to our friend Gary Palmisano, see if he's going to be sending around a press release for it. I would love to get a chance to write about that and interview the winner for sure. We had a ton of activity last weekend on the DRF Tournament's website. A lot of different qualifying action, as we described on the show last week. We had Stephen Meyer winning a Belmont seat, George Nixon and John Gasper winning their way to the Monmouth Challenge, which is happening on June 2nd, another event that will bring in players from all over the country. It's one of those contests throughout the year I can think of, along with the Horse Player World Series, that functions as a de facto Matisse family reunion. Always expect to see them there. Then we had in the World Horse Players Tour Santa Anita contest, Brendan Fay and Russ Axelrod winning their $5,000 bankrolls to that event, which of course is the next big thing coming up for DRF tournaments. All the money's added. We're filming this TV show happening in just over 2 weeks out at Santa Anita Park, and there are still chances to qualify for that. And then the other big winner on DRF tournaments over the weekend was Greg Kingma, who netted a seat to the 2019 World Championship of Handicapping. That's DRF's big online championship event, which in its second year is expected to fill the 200 entries, making it a $1 million contest with no takeout. And you can qualify for that one and for the World Horse Player Tour Santa Anita contest exclusively on the DRF Tournament site, which you can find at tournaments.drf.com.
Excellent. All right. Well, that out of the way, let's lay out your plan with the podcast. I know you're taping later this morning with Jonathan and with Nick Tamaro and others. What is your layout for
opportunities? We got a cool week. I got a lot of broadcasting coming up. It's almost Bick-esque, I'd say, the amount of hours I'm going to be putting in, Steve, in the next couple of days. Actually, I don't think we quite reach those heights, but we've got today, this morning, and you can listen in the archive to this one if you're going to be listening to At the Races Live. It's going to be me and Paul Matisse, who we mentioned before, JK, of course, and Nick Tamaro. Primary focus is going to be the Oaks and the Oaks Undercard Stakes on this show, though, of course, we will take a little bit of a look ahead to the Derby. Then this evening, and you can sign up for this one to listen live if you want. You can find the marquee on DRF.com. We're going to have Jay Privman and Craig Milkowski of Timeform US talking about a deep dive on the Derby tonight. Then tomorrow, Thursday, the regular DRF Players podcast edition, JK and I once again, as always, and we'll be bringing in Mike Maloney, the author of Betting with an Edge, professional horse player, to talk Derby and Derby undercard. And then at night, I'm going to have the one, the only, Andy Beyer and DRF's national handicapper Mike Watchmaker to talk about the Derby and associated Pick Four races. So four cool shows coming up. I'll be sending out links to all of my content throughout the week from my Twitter at LoomsBoldly. You can find links on the DRF website. And if you're interested in the podcast, you can subscribe. You can find links on the DRF site, but probably the easiest thing to do is to subscribe via a service like iTunes, DRF Players Podcast, SoundCloud. You can find us there. You can also find us on Spreaker, like speaker, but with an R in there, Spreaker. And you can sign up, actually, to get an email anytime our shows go live on Spreaker. So lots of different ways to follow along and get the latest with my coverage of the tournament scene, Kentucky Derby and Oaks, etc.
Well, done. And let's turn your attention to your thoughts Friday, Saturday.
Well, I'm really excited. And I think for me, this is going to be one where, since my handicapping opinions aren't particularly clever, I'm very much drawn to favorites in both of the big races. What I'm hoping is going to become a thing here is I'm hoping it's going to become a triumph of betting, and I'm going to attempt to wager creatively, both vertically and horizontally, and try to get a result out of these races. Because I know they're super competitive, and I read people making cases for long shots, and I see the cases, but just my own handicapping opinion when I sit down and I look at the Kentucky Oaks is I think Midnight Bisou and Monomoy Girl are both going to run in the top four. And I think there's a handful of contenders who can be eliminated. So the plan for me in the Oaks is to set it up where those two have to run in the top four with my other two contenders, pressing situations where one or the other of them wins and keeping them sort of in the top three. So I'll bet a series of tries and supers in the Oaks, hoping that it's somewhat formful. And then when it comes to the Derby, I don't have the same confidence that two horses are going to run in the number, but I have a lot of confidence that one of the two horses who've run the biggest numbers, either Justify or Mendelsohn, are going to get the job done. And so my approach will differ slightly there, where I run probably more focused on exactas and a little tries, where one or the other of those horses wins, and then we fill in exactas and tries with other, you know, fairly logical contenders, Bolt Doro being one I might look to press a little bit. And then I was hoping to pull off this international arbitrage move. I was fortunate enough while over in England to get some Justify at 5-1. I was hoping Mendelsohn might drift here and be a 6-1 price, maybe even longer. But I don't know. I'm hearing enough positives about him that I'm not sure if that move is going to work that well. I may, if I decide to do anything, I may just sort of save with him to cover the stake that I have out on Justify. We'll see what happens. If he can get up to 6-1 or higher, it might become more of a just a regular old double win bet with those two. I'll hope the string of winning favorites continues in the race. And that's sort of what I'm thinking. I wish I could come here and give you a clever 12 or 15-1 shot here, Steve, but it's just not the way I see these races this year.
Yeah, and I appreciate, you know, that frankness. And you know, I see people saying, oh, well, I can understand Justify, but I can't play him. Whoa. To me, it's a foolhardy approach, because if you're willing to acknowledge, I mean, if you have questions about his quality, that's one thing. But if you say, well, absolutely he can win, but I don't want him because he's 3-1, stop with that. It's just you're shooting yourself in the head, not even in the foot. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's pools other than the wind pool too. You know, that's
exactly
what I would say to
well,
those
but
folks. You know,
there's people who are saying, well, I'm going to throw him out entirely. Why?
Well, that's risky.
Why? You've got, and you know, I'm quote unquote against Mendelsohn, but Is he going to be on all the multi-race tickets? Yes. Is there going to be a ticket where he's on top and the horses I prefer are underneath him? Of course. And especially, you know, especially with the increments that are available to you. I mean, there's all kinds of saver opportunities versus those horses that you have a question about. And for, let's say this. Here's an example. Let's say you like whoever in the Derby, but you're scared of both Mendelsohn and or Justify. Do a Mendelsohn Justify all with the Turf Classic or with the 13th race. So if they win, you've got something. You've got something nice, and you know, anything. I mean, there's so many ways to dance around this issue.
Another thing I would say is if you've got your key horse in the Derby, even if you're going to take a portion of your play and try to, and I get playing some combinations, busting Mendelsohn all the way out much more than I do Justify. Justify to me seems if he's not going to win, I feel like he's still going to run, you know, second, third, or fourth. Mendelsohn I can see as kind of he shows his form and wins, or he gets nothing. But for very little amount of your bankroll with your key horse, you could certainly play an exacta, Justify Mendelsohn over your key to at least get your stake back.
Right.
And then, you know, not have those horses in the underneath slots to save money and or try to maximize value. And then I don't mind your idea, you know, an extension of your idea in the vertical pools where you play those two, you pick a small combination, Mendelsohn Justify over your other contenders over key, just as a way to, like you said, you don't want to cut off your nose to I'm mixing the metaphor, but you don't want to cut off your nose to spite your face. If you think it's one thing if you, for some reason in your handicapping opinion, you like legit don't like these horses at all, okay, yeah, take a shot. I get it from a risk-reward point of view. I don't want to discourage anybody from being creative. But if you like them and you're saying, oh, well, you know, at 4-1 I bet, but at 3-1 I'm not, you know, that's, you're getting into the kind of hair splitting that can be very costly. And it's worth trying to think of clever ways to at least take some portion of your play and allot it with those horses on top over what you like underneath. And then, you know, take the other 80-90% of your money and play it how you were going to. But don't, if you like these horses, I wouldn't feel good sitting there and watching them, watching the most likely winner beat my value key and getting nothing. That's not going to feel very good at 7:00 on Saturday night.
Pete, final thoughts. And, of course, everybody will have the opportunity to listen multiple times, as you mentioned, to the podcasts. But some final thoughts. Andy Serling joining us next.
Oh, fantastic. Always, I'll tune in later. Always great to hear what Andy has to say. I've been enjoying his comments on the race on Twitter. But I'm just psyched. I, you know, again, it's always more fun when you can go into the Derby and have a horse you want to play at 8, 12, 15 to 1. But I've, in my own personal experience in betting the race, those years I usually end up with tickets that aren't worth the paper they're printed on. And I've had been fortunate with, you know, certain years with horses at the lower end of the odds spectrum, whether it was Orb or Barbaro, to be able to construct wagers around them, whether it's vertically or horizontally, where you can still get paid. Not as much fun as saying, hey, I had the Derby winner and he paid 20, but the money spends, and there is an emotional value as a horse player to being right, cashing in the Kentucky Derby, and I'd be lying if I didn't cop to that. So I'm hoping it's going to be one of those good years at the windows this weekend, and look forward to listening to more of your coverage, Steve, and enjoying a mint julep on Saturday and watching these horses run under the Twin Spires.
Favorite Derby or favorite moment, ticket, anything?
I'll pop with my first Derby. That's the thing that came into mind first, just the experience of being there in 98 for Real Quiet. Didn't
nice.
End up making any money on the race. I was on the Indian Charlie bandwagon, I think, back then. But it was just such a great experience to be there, the energy in the crowd. It's such a triumph of racing. The things that racing, when racing works, it works as a sporting event and a gambling game. The Derby and being there for the Derby, it's emblematic of that. And even more, you know, you just really feel like you're participating in this important cultural event. And it was, you know, I'm comfortable enough to admit that, you know, I got the goosebumps with my old Kentucky home that first time. And then didn't really get it watching on TV all those other years. You know, it's like, oh, what's going on here? What are these people crying? And then you get there and you feel that wave of emotion. And it was very real and cool and something that I still think back to. So for all the Derbies I've been to and watched subsequently, there's something still very special about that first one. It should be a bucket list item for every At the Races listener.
Yeah, Pete Fornatel, everybody. And Real Quiet's win happened exactly 20 years ago today.
Awesome.
May 2nd.
That's Excellent. Great. I didn't realize that.
20 years ago today. I
feel slightly
it.
Old, but, you know, I'll put on Sergeant Pepper and we'll go from there.
There it is. Pete Fornatel, everybody. Looms boldly, and watch for the podcast tonight. Andy Serling of the New York Racing Association. Andy doing the work and is going to have opinions on the great videos that he produces for NYRA and on the website. Joins us now. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Andy, just taking the survey. We talked yesterday, and you got the sense that the more you were watching replays and the more you looked at this race, the more engaged you got.
Really? I don't remember that conversation, but okay. I mean, it's the Derby. It's an interesting race. I'm not sure where we're going when you start out by making something up, but I'll roll along with it. Oh, God. I mean, every time I looked at one PP line, I got more and more excited. Is that good?
Yeah, that's great. The conversation we had last night when you said you were watching the replays and that you were finding, you know, you were finding some things out about some of the horses that kind of enhanced what the congregation will mean on Saturday.
It seems like a pretty interesting Derby. The Derby's usually pretty interesting. It seems a little more interesting than some of the ones recently. I'm looking forward to the favorites not winning every year. That's the moment that'll excite me, when the favorite doesn't win. Hasn't the favorite won 5 years in a row or something?
Yeah, they have, and it's it's unprecedented.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think a lot of people think it's, you know, will point right towards the point system, which in a way has changed the race a little bit. been banging in the apartment next to mine that was going to be over 2 months ago. It isn't. but it's okay because the people whose apartment they're banging in, they're at work. so it's really okay. It has taken out some of those, you know, sort of hopeless speed types, like A Promise Is Fulfilled. So he's in this year, so maybe that'll add a little more speed to the race. But I do think that that is the one effect that's happened in the race, is that there are people who ran these speed horses that probably wouldn't qualify under this system haven't run. So that has changed the race a little bit. And that'll reduce the chaos factor. And I always thought the chaos factor was one of the fun things about the Derby. So, you know, that's sort of gone. But, the field's okay, right? I mean, there's some horses in there that might actually be pretty good. It's hard to know. You know, we've had sort of odd crops over the last few years, right? I mean, you look at last year's Kentucky Derby and who out of that race, and remind me who it is, who out of that race turned out to be any good. I don't think anybody, right?
Preston
had a good year when he was turned back, and you know, a couple horses won some races, but nobody out of that race. You go, wow, that horse, you know, like a Gun Runner 2 years ago, right? Who
right.
was sort of unremarkable when they were running the Derby, but he gradually got better and he turned into an exceptionally good horse over the last year. It's actually interesting. I wonder who are the Derby horses in the last 5 years that have turned out to be really good horses in retrospect.
Well, obviously, I mean, you started with the
right, Gun Runner,
you know, the obvious answer. Yeah, he was. Well, that part of the problem is that any of the ones that perform well find themselves, you know, hustled off to the shed. I mean, that complicates
things. Well, they weren't hustled
off
to the shed. They were sold before. But even the ones, I mean, who are the ones that were, well, who was hustled off, though? Who really was, right? Classic Empire and Practical Joke had pre-existing stud deals.
Right.
I'm just trying to think, you know. Who did we really lose that quickly? You know, I mean, Totalist turned out to be a nice horse, but he was nothing
right.
that special. Honor Code turned out to be a very nice horse. I wouldn't, you know, consider him one of the, you know, but he didn't run in the Derby, right? Totalist didn't either.
No. Belmont. But
California Chrome, in fairness. He was
well, he was, but he was good from the get-go. He was good coming in.
Yes, but people are going to say he was, but his Triple Crown races were actually pretty unspectacular. They were kind of nice wins against bad fields, right? I mean, he really got good last year. That was when he turned into a really good horse, 2 years ago, whatever. That was when he turned into a really good horse.
That's fair. It's fair. Yeah. And the horse
funny play, you know, West Coast was the top three-year-old, right, from last year.
But not a Derby. Not a classic horse.
Right. Ran easy going. And it feels like this year's Derby, there are horses that might actually be justified. Maybe a very good horse. Mendelsohn might be a very good horse. These horses have a chance to be really good horses. Whether they win or not in this race. I mean, they'll have to win this race to try to be good horses.
Well, fold in Hofberg and fold in. Yeah, some of the.
I'm not
in
the Hofberg hype thing. I don't
well,
get
but
it.
But he's got.
He might be a good horse, but I mean, I don't see how I could possibly bet him in this race, and I don't understand why he's worth. I mean, he's at 40-1. If somebody wanted to throw him in, I could see that. I'm not, you know. His maiden race was a nice win. He took full advantage of a collapsed pace last time out. Audible, who I'm not enamored with, but as an outside chance, I think, in the Derby, actually did much more running. I mean, at least he was, like, actually closer to the pace early in the race before he started drifting back. Hofberg was always way back in that race. He just sort of made his run at the end and then was ineffectual down the lane behind Audible. Now, if you think Audible, the horse that, you know, is one of these Todd horses that ran a big race to prep, and he's not going to appear again, and you don't want to hold, if you were to just handicap the race based on the horses on the track, and I understand Audible has more experience, but Audible ran much, much better than he did. Now, the argument is, well, it was just his second start this year, third start of his career, though it's only Audible's fifth start of his career, and he has more room to improve, and I don't really trust that Audible's going to bring that good form from Florida to Kentucky, and I think Audible take another step forward. Okay, fine. I don't necessarily totally disagree with that, but I mean, what price is Hofberg going to be? Because he feels like a horse that shouldn't be less than 40-1, right?
No, he's going to be way below that. He's going to be, he might end up even, in fact, with the mojo going on here, he might end up 18-1.
Yeah, that's an underlay, in my opinion. I mean, listen, I don't have some great record in the Derby, but he wouldn't be on my tickets. So I won't be surprised if he runs okay.
How are you going to approach it, Andy? Give us a bit of a structure and
I'm going to root for my friend Chad Brown.
Yep.
So I don't really I'll use him, but I hope Chad wins. I'm going to try to lose less than $80 because I'm never right in the Derby. I mean, I it's not, you know, I'm not the guy. I can have opinions of the race, but I'm not going to dive in head first. I think Bolt Duro is probably one of the horses that I'll use in the race. I'm not really sure. I don't have to tape my video for 2 days. I think he's pretty good. Listen, I think Justify can win the race. I don't have a big argument against Justify. I think Enticed has a chance in here. You know, if you look at the Wood Memorial, I would much rather bet Enticed at twice the price of Vino Rosso if I had to bet one of the two. And I think it'll be a much bigger price because if you look at that race, and I think Vino Rosso ran fine in there, but Enticed was used hard early, right out of the gate they were riding him. And that sort of forced that Old Time Revival to run off a bit. And if you look where Old Time Revival finished, beating 25 lengths, Enticed was there, and he made the first move. He was aggressively ridden to it. I think he would benefit from a less aggressive ride in this race. I'm not sure why they feel like he has to be one of these sort of go-go-go horses, which he frequently is in his races. And I think, you know, and he fought hard in the stretch. He was absolutely interfered with. Do I think he would have won? No, but I would have taken down Vino Rosso. I think the interference was significant. And I don't see how you can argue against that if you look at the head-on. So I think he ran the better race of the two, and it'll be a much bigger price. So he becomes sort of usable at value. Is he ultimately going to be good enough? I don't know. Probably not. He's probably a little bit too slow. It does feel like you want a horse. I mean, at least, you know, you look through the race, there are horses like Bolt Duro and even Good Magic last year in his third start who run figures that are fast enough that they could be good enough to win. Obviously, the question with Good Magic is whether or not he's going to ultimately be effective in a mile and a quarter. When's he going to make his move? How well is he going to finish the race? He didn't finish the Bluegrass like a horse that wants to go farther, but that doesn't mean that he hasn't improved since then, and I know the indications are he's doing very well since the race. See what price he is. You know, maybe you're supposed to keep an open mind in this Derby and see what the prices are. I mean, I'm not really sure. I wouldn't bet Mendelsohn. I wouldn't be shocked if he won. He might be really good, but this is a very different circumstance than the one that he had in Dubai, where he's highly unlikely to be the speed horse. And if he was, he'd probably have to go fast to do it. And I don't think he's capable of doing that. So he's in all likelihood going to be taking some dirt for the first time and not going to get the comfortable trip he had. But it's not like he hasn't rated in turf races, but there's a difference between rating the turf and the dirt. And he was in Dubai winning 5 weeks before the race. I don't care that he went to Ireland and then he came back here. He's traveled a lot. It's not easy to do under these circumstances. And it's not a great gamble in the 5 or 6 to 1 range, but he might be very, very good. And the only horse that I don't like at all that's going to take money is Magnum Moon.
Mm, I agree. I'm in the same camp on that.
And I hated his last race. I mean, he was crawling on a lead in a race that really wasn't that fast. I mean, the drifting isn't even the biggest. I mean, drifting isn't great, but it's not even the biggest of my complaints. I don't like that he sort of plateaued, and he had such an easy trip. I don't want these horses off these easy trips. And that's one of the chink in the armor of Justify. You know, you go through his race. I know that, you know, there have been some thought to me that he got some big education in his first start. I don't agree with that at all in watching his first start over again. You know, he doesn't break slowly as much as it seems like it takes him a second to get into gear, maybe. Mm, you know,
he's a big horse.
So in that race, he could have broke, you know, like he did, and he just sort of had to motor himself in there, but he was probably between horses for a fraction, you know, 4 or 5 seconds. And listen, he's a superior talent. I'm not denying that. Justify is really good, really good. And he might, listen, he'll just outrun these horses, but they don't tend to. I think one of the greatest misconceptions I hear, people are always saying that Bellamy Road was some sort of phony or something. And Bellamy Road may have been a real world-class talent. And what he did 4 months, you know, running 4 months later in the Travers and running second to Flower Alley, he was very good at that time. He did run second to the Breeders' Cup a couple months later. was remarkable. And he didn't run badly in the Derby. And Flower Alley was the horse who, you know, was engaged in that pace as well in the Derby, if you'll forget. Look what he went on to do. If Justify were a Bellamy Road, it'd probably bode very well for him if he stayed sound. Bellamy Road's problem was he didn't stay sound. But Bellamy Road also got engaged in a pace that was supersonic. Now, Spanish Chestnut had a lot to do with that, and there are no Spanish Chestnuts in this race. But it may be his undoing, you know, depending on what happens. I can't imagine that Dale Romans is not going full bore with Promises Fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
Dale doesn't play the game that way. You know, Dale knows where that horse is, and he's going to go. And if they want to keep up with him, they're going to keep up with him. And if he's going to lose, he's going to lose with his strength. That's what Dale does. One of the reasons Dale's won a lot of big races. So Justify's going to have to contend with that horse in some respect. And they say he can rate, but we'll see how well he rates in a big field going a mile and a quarter, et cetera, et cetera. But he also, you know, he's trained by as great a dirt trainer as I've seen in my lifetime, that's for sure. And he knows how to win the Derby, so maybe that'll happen with Justify. I'm scared of him. Of all the favorites, you have to be scared of him.
I agree. That's
anyway.
What kind of collapse horse do you typically like to include exotic wise in?
One that's good enough to win.
Interesting.
I'm not a clunk up. Yeah, I'm not. I'm telling you, I'm just not. I don't get involved enough from the gambling aspect to look at it that way. I prefer to think about horses I think are more likely to win. And I'm looking at it from that perspective because maybe I'll play some multi-race bets. I'm not particularly good with that stuff. I mean, who are the collapse types you would want in here? I mean, I don't think Free Drop Billy's good enough. I suppose there's a miracle situation where he gets fourth. I wish Lone Sailor was good enough, and I'll be rooting for Tom, but I don't know if he's really good. I mean, Hofburn is a collapse type horse. I watch My Boy Jack's races. I don't like this horse. Do you think he wants a mile and a quarter, by the way?
No.
He looks like he's got a little bit of hanging him late in races, right?
It may be an optical illusion, Andy, but I'll say one thing. Jay Privman, who is as good as identifying closing sprinter types as anybody. Jay said that immediately upon presentation of this horse, and that when Jay says it, it sticks in my mind.
I mean, listen, you know, you could argue that if you want a goofy horse, Combatant, who I also think hangs a little bit at the end, but it's been a while since he's gotten a pace in his favor, but, you know, he did hang in that Southwest, but he was moving outside when you wanted to be inside, right? And he really has been pace compromised. And listen, I mean, I don't really like Salamini, but he was trip compromised last time also.
The horse that I'm
intrigued by, not that I would bet him in any sense, and I don't see how he gets tripping wins, the horse whose identity I don't get but might be okay is Noble Indy. He really ran well last time. I mean, his race at Fairgrounds was good. I don't know how good a race it was. That's the problem. And I have no identity for him. He hasn't run now in 6 weeks. None of his other races are remotely good enough to make him a contender, but he has improved with each start, and his last race was very good and better than the Fig suggests. It's still not good enough to win here, and the problem is, where's he going in this race? He's a speed type that's going to be on the outside, he's going to be chasing a fast pace, and what's he going to do? He's going to make this move and put away Justify and then hold off any assortment of other horses? Geez, good luck to him, but he did run really well in the Fairgrounds race. You can't deny that. That was some effort.
I'm glad you included that because I talked about how we had discussed last night that quotation or that question people should ask themselves: what kind of trip is going to need to happen for my horse or for this horse I'm looking at to succeed? And that's a great thing to ask yourself Monday through Sunday.
Yeah, right, exactly. I was going to say, that's a question you should be asking yourself on every horse you bet. You know, I mean, it's also an interesting part of the game, right, trying to imagine how the race is run and how your horse fits into it. Can you actually accurately predict that? It's not easy. It's hard, and a lot of things, different things happen that you wouldn't expect. I don't know. You know, I'm interested in Noble Indy as a horse based on his last race, but the problem also is that Todd Fletcher doesn't have a great record with these horses. He's run an awful lot of horses, and I know... Listen, Todd's won an enormous amount of races, and his talent as a trainer is not to be questioned. But Todd's great skill, and if you were to say, you know, what is the thing he's unbelievable at, is getting horses to win Derby preps. It's amazing what he's able to do to get these horses to win these Derby preps. He does not have a – I know he's won two Derbies, and all that's going to matter, you know, all that matters when you die or what there are certain achievements you've had, and they can't ever take away the fact that Todd's won two Derbies. But as gamblers, you do have to analyze these things. He won with a mediocre horse that caught a sloppy track and beat a bad field. I mean, the second horse was Icebox. What has he done since that? You know, what did he do after that race? And he probably was best, frankly, Icebox. And he won with Always Dreaming, who got a gold trip on a very good rail and has been awful since that race. You'll see what he does on Saturday. If he isn't successful on Saturday, good luck to him. You know, he's got a controlling speed position. So it looks like, at the end of the day, he won two sort of fluky Derbies on wet tracks. And the rest of his horses badly underachieved. And I don't think you can just completely disregard that.
I don't disagree.
I mean, I think you have to look at it objectively.
Eddie, before we go, because I know you got an appointment, but... any Oaks thought and any other horse on the 2 days that you've noticed is involved that you have an interest in betting?
No, I just haven't really looked. I mean, I glanced through the Oaks. I wish I could have made a case for Take Charge Paul at a win at a mile and an eighth, but I feel like a mile and an eighth seemed to be too far, and she's probably going to be engaged in a pace that's not going to be detrimental to her. I think she's a little interesting at a price. I think Modern Boy Girl is going to have a tough time in that race. I think the pace is going to be tough, and she drew a tough post. And of the favorites, the California horse might be the better of the two. I respect Modern Boy Girl and won't be surprised if she runs really well, but she's not the gamble that I'd want to make in that race. I think if I had to bet one of two favorites, I'd prefer the horse from California, who seems to be more tractable. But to be honest with you, I looked through the race. I didn't do a significant amount of work on it. I mean, Take Charge Paul is a horse that interests me. I just don't know if this is the right race for her.
Well, Friday, we should tell people the flat out on Oaks Day at Belmont.
How excited are you for the flat out?
Well, I'm excited because it gives me a Scooter Dickey talking point. And Scooter's got flatlined running here tomorrow the opening verse. So
nice. Well, Andy, flat out was a good horse.
As we go out, I'm playing three Kentucky Derbies today, audio that were run on May 2nd, and one of them you had a funny bet story, and we're going to listen to Little E.T., the 92 Derby, Pat Day's elusive Derby win, and you said that when I brought up Little E.T. the other day, you said that's funny. I glanced up at the board. Remind people what was going on those years when there were two different pools.
Well, a lot of different pools, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know that the New York simulcasting pool, he was 70-1. I think it was 70-1. I remember looking up and thinking, God, how is Lily T 70-1? So I bet some minor amount of money on him, but yeah, never particularly had a great affinity for him. And our question was, what did he do after that? Did he win any races? He might have.
He did. He did. Uh-huh. He won. I think he won an Oakland handicap for.
That's something. Yeah. That rings a bell.
Yep.
That rings a bell.
Yeah.
All right. It's been fun. I'm more excited about the Derby now, Steve. Now that I've talked to you and I'm awake.
And I'm excited for the flat out. Andy Serlich and Thursday
the
videos, right?
Pretty good this year. Yeah, the flat out's actually pretty good this year.
Yeah, I thought so too.
It's like a big field, like eight horses. We have $150,000 carryover into 6-6 tomorrow.
Two-day carryover.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Steve.
I appreciate it. Andy
Serlich, everybody. And as we go out, and Little E.T. became a real favorite for a lot of people. It's a special Derby around here. And up in the stakes room, for instance, there's the quote of Pat Day. I know there's a Derby out there with my name on it. And given his success here, in particular, Pat Day, it was maddening that he couldn't get a Derby win, and it came with an unlikely horse in Little E.T. And one of the things about it that became, I mean, personally, in my own memory, it wasn't a special Derby to me because that it came at a time when I wasn't as connected really to the game. I was playing, but getting friendly with Lynn Whiting, in particular, the late Lynn Whiting that we've lost in the last year, that brought Little E.T. Much more into focus and becoming acquainted and getting to know Pat Day as well over these last 15 plus years. And Little E.T.'s win, I think everyone, certainly the people around here that were betting on for any number of reasons, Cal Partee, you think about Hot Springs and Oaklawn, and so many aspects of the connections were very satisfying. And we had the thing the other night at Molly Malone's, and John Engelhardt was on the panel, and he wrote the longest shot, in fact, about Little E.T. Here it is, and the 1992 Derby. When we come back, Sid Fernando will be waiting on the other side as well.
And they're off in the Kentucky Derby. Little E.T. broke Shockley. Dance four from the extreme outside charges up along with disposal. Snappy landing. And devil his due right there with the early leaders. Passing the stands for the first time. Snappy landing on the inside has the lead. That's devil his due second. Casual eyes up close in third. Along the inside, Al Sabine is fourth. Pine Bluff is three off the rail. Dance floor four off the rail. And sixth as they round the clubhouse turn. Disposal is seventh. Then from between horses, that's Cupid de Savoia racing in eighth position. Pistols and Roses is right there. And Pistols and Roses moves up. Technology is next, followed by Thayer. After that, it's Lil E.T. The gray horse on the outside is a static ride. Now they straighten away down the backstretch. And Dance Floor on the outside takes the lead by a length. Snappy Landing is second. And Pine Bluff, just two off the leader, is racing third on the outside. Then comes Devil Is Due, Al Sabine at the rail, Casual Lies is sixth. On the outside, Pistols and Roses races seventh, Technology is eighth. Quante de Savoia moving through and finding room on the inside. Then comes Lily T. Arazi is now charging up in the middle of the racetrack. Arazi is flying, moving around the far turn. Dance Floor has the lead. Pine Bluff is second. Casual Eyes is third. And Arazi on the outside is gaining ground with every stride. Moving to the top of the stretch. Dance Floor leads it by one. Casual Eyes in second by a head. Arazi on the outside. Now three of them tightly bunched as they turn for home. Dance Floor at the rail with a short lead. Arazi is next. Middle of the racetrack. Lily T. Here comes Casual Eyes putting in a run between horses. And down the stretch they come. Lily T. on the outside with Pat Day takes command. Casual Eyes is second and the others are dropping back. Coming through the stretch and to the wire. Lil E.T. on the outside has the lead by one. Casual Eyes is second. Lil E.T. wins the Derby by one with Pat Day aboard. Casual Eyes second. Four back it was Dance Floor. Then came Countess de Savoia followed by Pine Bluff. Along the inside, Dr. Devious. Then it was Al Sabine and finally Arazi who made a ball move around the far turn, but didn't have it in the stretch. And the Derby, a slow one, 2 minutes and 4 seconds.
An extremely slow Kentucky Derby, but Lil E.T., the surprise unofficial winner.